Well, good to be back with you at CPC again this week as we continue our series through 1 Peter and into our fourth sermon now as we look at chapter 3. I want you to imagine that a young, engaged, new Christian couple come to you for advice about marriage. They come to you because they see you as a Christian and someone who might know some things about this. How do Christians do marriage, they ask you. You might respond, well, what do you mean do marriage? You mean do the wedding ceremony? No, how do you Christians do marriage? Perhaps they're from an Australian-born Chinese family and they say, well, I know how Australian-born Chinese families, our families do marriage, but we want to know what it is to be a Christian husband and a Christian wife. Can you help us? What might you say? I tell married students training for ministry at Sydney Missionary and Bible College that a healthy marriage is critical to your service for Christ. Why? Well, not only because how you treat your wives and husbands really matters, but because it's really hard to have a good ministry flow out of a strained marriage. So what then does a Christian marriage look like? Whether you're married or unmarried, Peter gives the most helpful window for all of the church. And here it is in a nutshell. I'll just give it to you, the essence of this sermon, and then we'll unpack that as we look through the text. The essence of it, I think, is as part of our lives of submission to Christ, God calls wives to submit to their husbands and husbands to be considerate and respectful of their wife. That's it. So as we now keep our young engaged couple in mind, let's look at Peter's guidance. As we've seen in 1 Peter so far, knowing whose we are changes how we view government, how we view our boss, our employers, and even more significantly, our closest human relationship, of course, will be impacted by our relationship to Christ. That we are now a trusting child of our Heavenly Father. And so too, if you're married, you do so as a child of God. And your husband and wife is married to a child of God. That's going to mean some enormous changes to the marriage relationship. And Peter picks just a few that overlap really with Paul's emphases of marriage in Ephesians 5. Speaking to the wives first, he will use a word he'd used earlier in 1 Peter a few times, the word submission. It's the opposite of resisting, of subverting. So James, for example, talks about submitting to God and resisting the devil. Peter had already said to all Christians in chapter 2, verse 13, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every authority. He said in chapter 2, verse 18, slaves, submit yourselves to your good or even bad masters. Now, I'm not seeking to repeat last week's sermon now, but I am trying to re-immerse ourselves in what Peter means with these foundational words in the same way. Chapter 3, verse 1, in the same way. Because it's the basis of what he says to wives in verse 1. And the basis of what he will say to the husbands in verse 7. I realise that submission is a difficult topic in Sydney today. And I'm working that out. And as I preach this message, I want to say up front that it's quite possible I'll say things in the wrong way here to unintentionally misrepresent Peter's view. We all are products of our culture. But be gracious with me if you think I've gone too far or not far enough in echoing what he says. Marriage is a deeply cultural phenomenon. In Mongolia, for example, it was taken as a given that wives would be humble as their chief virtue, humility. And that's just not the case in Australia. So let's have a look at verses 1 to 6. The word to the wives. Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands. Now, in Australian culture, as I said, that word submissive can make some nervous, if not outraged. But let's allow Peter to explain God's perspective on this. Wives, in the same way as we've been speaking, be submissive to your husbands, so that, reason one, if then any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives, when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. Now, I've seen this actually played out in a Mongolian town, where many of the men were alcoholics at the end of communism. This was a most helpful word, but a very tough one for the wives with alcoholic husbands to hear in the church. Many of the wives were coming to church and their husbands weren't. How were they to be submissive to their husbands? But the script that Peter lays out took place. Wives who carried the families and earned the family income often and raised the kids often on their own sought to begin showing respect to their unworthy husbands. Seeing the grace of Christ in their lives, or as Peter puts it, they were won over by their wives, verse 1, or verse 2, the purity and reverence of their transformed wives was noticed by their husbands. Now this, of course, raises awful challenges of domestic violence that might come to mind, which is a timeless activity and it's international, where this most precious and sacred relationship is the source of great abuse and pain for many women and men as well. And I can't seek to resolve that here. But I would urge you, if you're in that situation or if this raises issues with you, to share it with friends as we move through this. What Peter's saying here doesn't necessarily address all forms of sin, but it is a helpful guide for Christian relationships. Peter will address the husbands in verse 7 and speak about that matter, but here he is speaking, I think, to a different problem and perhaps even a different form of abuse. Some wives, for example, know very well how to emotionally crush and diminish their husbands. Some wives, perhaps imitating the mother of their own culture, try being more like a mother figure in their marriage and in their husband's life. There may be rules for the husband, manipulation and guilt and expressing constant disappointment, talking down to husbands until the husbands submit to them, refusing to consult with husbands on big decisions that will affect the marriage and their children, or to ridicule him with contrary views when he raises them. Normally in Australian culture, it's okay to diminish the husband. In television commercials, it's the wives who are the competent ones and the men are the selfish or incapable fools. Run the men down. So this too is a word in season. Now perhaps a husband is terribly underperforming, but Peter points to a more Christ-like way for Christians. Instead of resisting his attempts to lead the family or showing doubts about his capacity, instead of coming down harder on your husband, try coming down beside him. Listen to him, respect him, honour him, as Peter will say for all Christians to do to all Christians. Chapter 2, verse 17, honour everyone. So why not try that most fully with your husband if you're married? Honouring him. Why? It may be because many husbands wilt down to the level of the resistance they're shown. This family is impossible to lead, I give up. Being a human is difficult. Being a husband is difficult. Being a father is difficult. And resistance makes it all the harder. But when a husband hears from his wife, "You've got a wonderful dad, kids. Do you realize that?" It's so empowering, it's so motivating to have someone who believes in him, who has confidence in him, who trusts him enough to relinquish control and patiently spur him on as he seeks to lead his family. Now, when I've run these things by people who aren't Christians, say in pre-marriage counselling, The idea of submission gets a hard rap in the media, but they've seemed to understand it fairly easily. Sometimes we get to the point by me asking this. I say, do you respect the man you're about to marry to the wife or the fiancé? Yes, of course, I respect him very much. Well, all the Bible is saying is keep doing that. Keep respecting him. That's the soil that will bring out the best in him. It doesn't guarantee it, of course. But your respect for him is much better than the alternative. On a more personal note, I feel I don't deserve the respect and confidence that my wife Ashley gives me. She has a willingness to voluntarily hear what I'm thinking and be slow to resist it cynically. She will often speak well of me directly and in front of the children and in front of other people. She's graciously moved countries and ministries and houses together with me. Things that have not been easy for her. I'm not always worthy of her respect and her honour, but her respect and her honour of me makes it much easier for me to be respectable than it otherwise would be. Perhaps she trusts God enough to entrust more of herself to me, knowing that her life is always in God's good hands. Peter then continues the profile of the Christian wife. In a world so obsessed with diets and outward beauty, on the slimming and toning and makeup to be more beautiful, more acceptable in the world's eyes, Peter tells us what is beautiful and valuable in God's sight. Verse 3, your beauty should not come from outward adornment. Not that these things are wrong in themselves, such as braided hair and the wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothes. Instead, something better. It should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. Sometimes you might hear of someone, she's a beautiful person. And after hearing that, you still don't know what she looks like. Something is being said of the most beautiful beauty a person can have, an inner beauty that just genuinely radiates. And Peter says, just as we look at the models of Elijah or Moses or Abraham as great figures, so too we can look at the holy women in the Bible in verse 5. Notice the connection between submission to husbands and putting their hope in God, as I mentioned about Ashley, my wife, doing that. Trusting God allows you to put more confidence in your husband. He will get it wrong from time to time, you can be sure of that. But God knows that already. Look at verse 5. For this is the way the holy women of the past, who put their hope in God, used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. You are her daughters if you do what is right, and do not give way to fear. Now, Peter is not saying here that all wives are to call their husbands master. That was, I take it, a cultural thing to do. Some cultures still do that, and even the English expression, the Lord of the Manor, expresses that kind of sentiment. Sometimes we know very clearly that Abraham got things very wrong. Just pretend that you're not my wife, Sarah. And he hardly seems worthy of much respect at times. Sarah too made her mistakes, but in Genesis 18, she shows a level of respect for him, even in her sadness and her trials at not being able to give birth, and when her fears made trusting God as Abraham's wife very difficult. Marriages and cultures are diverse, but Peter leaves how it looks precisely in our culture largely up to us, I take it, when he says, you are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear in your marriage. The fear that comes with trusting your ordinary man does not overwhelm your trust in God. you know that your truest husband, Christ, the groom of the church, will ultimately be the one keeping you. And that might allow you to release a little the sense or desire for control. But Peter next wants to address the husbands. He does it with fewer words, perhaps because it's a simpler word to stomach. Perhaps he knew the submission one would be more difficult. Let's look together at verse 7 to see what he says. It may be simpler, but it's still not an easy word. It's difficult. Husbands, children of God, in the same way, as citizens of God's kingdom, the way you treat your wives will be revolutionized by the good news of Jesus. You too will submit to God by heeding how you, his Adams, treat his Eves. Your wife will benefit more than anyone from your Christian maturity. She not only has front row seats to your growth as Christ's disciple, but she will be the chief recipient of your Christian love. It's no use being a Christian everywhere else but at home. Now notice before we begin, there is an important word in both verses 1 and 7. It's the word your. Wives, be submissive to your husbands, not everyone else's husbands. And husbands, it's the wife submitting herself, not forced submission. You don't need to do that. Your part, your focus, is to be especially considerate and respectful of your wife. A more literal way to translate the verb considerate in verse 7 is with the word knowledge. Husbands, in the same way, be considerate, live with knowledge, or live with your wife in an understanding way. Know her and treat her according to who she actually is, what she needs and likes that may differ from you and your needs and likes. And treat them with respect, Peter says, as the weaker vessel. NIV, I think, says weaker partner. I think weaker vessel is more literally what it's getting at. And I think the word vessel is chosen to suggest that it's her body and physical strength that Peter is talking about here, the vessel. A soul living in this body. Peter certainly is not suggesting any less intelligence or wisdom or capability, as Christians have wrongly thought at different times to our shame. Rather, being physically weaker generally can put wives in a more vulnerable position in marriage. In her helpful book on this topic, Claire Smith, in her book God's Good Design, suggests the weakness too could be referring to the voluntary submission, the voluntary position that the wife is putting herself in the marriage as she submits to her husband. Is this then a reason for a husband to disrespect the wife? On the contrary, Peter adds a second instruction that is the opposite of abuse or degradation. Husbands are, verse 7, to treat them with respect, or more literally, to grant her honour. The honour due to every Christian wife comes not only through her created dignity as a human, but because they also are God's spiritual children, heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, as Peter beautifully puts it, to remind the men of the value of their wives. Heirs with you of the gracious gift of life. Grace there. Are you hearing that? Wives are never to be treated with less respect than that. Cherished as a child of your King and as your dear sister in Christ. A last motivation Peter adds is so that nothing will hinder your prayers. This may be the husband's prayers, since God's ears are open to the righteous, we read in verse 12. A cruel or degrading husband should not presume to have God's ear. But such a husband will also struggle to pray with his wife, and so miss the marital strengthening that praying together as a couple brings. And so, brothers and sisters, unmarried and married, God may be raising some really confronting countercultural direction to you in his word now. But wives and husbands, I would urge you to give Peter's words your very best. Not because I or Peter need them of you, but because they are part of God's good news for you. Just as successful ice skating couples or dancing pairs require someone to lead and someone to follow, so it is in Christian marriage. And it leads to something beautiful when it's done well. It isn't easy. Mistakes and falls happen. And so it's important as a church that we're ready to humbly support each other in our brokenness and in our struggles and in our attempts for strong marriages and in our loving one another and picking up the pieces when they're not strong or when they break down. And we want to allow the good news to challenge and beautify our inherited cultural norms. The good news is not good news only because it saves, but because it transforms and it guides and it blesses us with what is difficult but good. Amen.